From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Concord.
Martinez.
Hercules.
I'm from Marina, California.
SF State, wherever that is.
Coming up, we're going to get to know some of the Bay Area's most interesting neighborhoods intimately.
What we try to do is build community here. We are only as strong as our weakest person.
We'll take a trip to Oakland's Fruitvale and San Antonio neighborhoods to see what's growing on there.
They give you seeds, carrots, radishes. But she says they don't like the carrots and radish, so they go and get their own seeds.
We can eat too many.
Because, you know.
Too much carrots. Yeah.
And we'll hear about innovations in Oakland schools.
There's a sense of being inspired and amazed and proud that our students are able to push through those traumatic experiences and be able to focus as well as they can.
That's today on Cross Currents. During the past half year, a group of our reporters had one assignment: spend time in Oakland's Fruitvale and San Antonio neighborhoods asking residents, business owners, teachers, students, and nonprofit workers what's happening in your community. It's not a typical approach to reporting. We didn't have a specific story in mind. We wanted to find out what stories neighbors wanted to tell.
Undocumented immigrants are invisible. Homeless people are invisible. Formerly incarcerated people are invisible. There's so many people who don't speak English are invisible. And so all these communities are silenced.
It's important for neighbors to actually know your neighbors. The only way that you're going to be able to fight the crime within your community is communicate with each other.
Youth are very resilient, and they come to this space still with a love of life and still with a love of learning and a love of each other, and you know, just kind of trying to figure out how to make sense of this crazy world that we've kind of provided for them as adults.
Our reporters found neighborhoods full of people working to make their communities a better place. Here's how the reporters described Fruitvale and San Antonio.
A little raw, rough, a little dingy in some corners, but sunny and bright and little. Yeah, sunny. It's just kind of like bright in other corners, but turning from one corner to the next, it can be kind of decaying or kind of falling to pieces, and then you turn another corner and it's been remodeled, refurbished, and it's this kind of like bright, gleaming area.
Funny. I found a lot of people were really funny and outgoing. Also, you know, there was, like, I'm not going to ignore the fact that there was, like, a lot of sadness, and I talked to people that were going through really tough times and trying to get through it. So I would say their daily lives are tough, but I think that that's sort of been the way of life there for so long that they are having a good time when there's a sense of community and they're gathering and playing cards or, you know, talking, telling jokes.
A lot of people have lived there all their lives. A lot of people live there, work there. You know, their families are there, they're raised there, so everybody kind of just seems to know each other. And so I see people trying to help each other out, trying to support each other. It's not really every man for themselves, you know. They really try to raise each other up and rebuild their neighborhood, their community.
And that brings us to today's first story from Roosevelt Middle School. Many public schools are coping with constant and deep funding cuts. So neighborhood schools are looking for creative ways to meet student needs. 14 of Oakland's public schools now house on-site health centers. One of the newest, a state-of-the-art clinic at Roosevelt, helps kids who are struggling with the twin traumas of violence and poverty. Karen Gordon reports on how the new principal plans to transform his school.
Roosevelt Middle School is in Oakland's San Antonio neighborhood. It's 6th through 8th grade. Kids are walking through the halls to their next class, laughing and joking with their friends. In the main office, students, parents, and teachers are busy, answering phones, filling out paperwork, and directing visitors to the health center. The office of Principal Cliff Hong is inside this active room, but he's often out in the school, making sure things are running smoothly. He's been in charge for 2 years now, and his focus is to improve the environment here at Roosevelt.
And yeah, I mean, we believe in broken windows theory, where you take care of the little things, and then the big things won't materialize.
Little things.
Like, you can't have hats in the building, right, and no hoods. And that's a practical thing, too, because we want to know if there's some sort of stranger that's on campus, So we can't have kids covering their faces, and we need to see who's here. So no hats and hoods. Once we change the reputation, more people will enroll. So we're almost there, but we need about 100 more kids to have that perfect structure.
That perfect structure is a unit that Principal Hong calls a family. Each family has about 120 kids per grade level, and within that family, they share the same teachers for each subject. That makes it easier for the teachers and students to get to know each other.
Every teacher in each family has the same conference period, so 5 days a week they can meet with each other and talk about the kids.
One of those kids is Ramey, an outgoing eighth grader at Roosevelt who's working in the office. He says he's seen the school change since Hong took over.
He's doing a better job than the other principal because I remember when I was sixth grade, when the old principal was here, she was nice and all, but then like school's like a mess, like a real complete mess.
Yeah. But it's better.
Yeah, it's better. I feel kind of more safe now.
But Ramey says he doesn't always feel safe after he leaves school.
Sometimes when I go, like when I walk home, I get scared sometimes because then there's a bad people around our school.
In the last 2 months, there have been about maybe 4 or 5 murders within like a mile or two of our school that have affected our kids.
Again, Principal Hong.
Someone's dad was murdered. Somebody's brother was murdered. About 5 to 6 of our kids witnessed a murder right next to them. So this wasn't, like last year we didn't have this many murders, but right now it's happening.
His concern about safety out in the neighborhood is very real. City of Oakland weekly crime reports show a spike in violent crimes like robbery, burglary, and auto theft of almost 50% over these same crimes last year. And the poor economy is not helping either. At Roosevelt, about 90% of the students qualify for free or reduced lunch program.
So with low income comes stress. Sometimes the kids just seem agitated and stressed out, and you start talking to them and dig a little deeper, and you find out that folks at home are stressed out. I've had parents ask me for jobs. Whether it's those singular events or just the fact that you are low income, kids are bringing trauma to school with them.
I went outside to talk with some of the kids about the neighborhood. 2 days earlier, there had been a safety lockdown at the school. Police had confronted an armed burglar who was fleeing in the direction of Roosevelt. I spoke with 3 seventh graders, Carolina, Amber, and Zakia, during their PE class.
That was scary.
It was scary?
It was very scary. Like, I really did not know it was going to happen.
I didn't like that thing because it was kind of scary for me because there's a lot of gun shooting and there's a helicopter. And when we saw the news, it was very scary. And today is a perfect day, and yesterday.
So the kids come to us with lots of baggage, lots of trauma, and, how do we meet those psychosocial needs?
To meet those needs, Mr. Hong now has a team to help the students cope. Counselors and therapists from partner programs offer services 5 days a week at the on-site health center.
So now, why don't I give you a tour of the health center?
As we head down the hall, Cliff Hong shares his vision for Roosevelt. He wants to make it a world-class public school within 10 years or less. On the way to the clinic, Mr. Hong stops to check in with some of the students.
Is that gum? Will you go ahead and spit that out? Okay, thank you. And you have to clean for me later. Okay, so this is our health center, and we are able to provide a range of services here. Let's go this way. This is
our triage. The clinic services include mental health, medical, and dental care.
So this is our dental facility here. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are
you? Good, good.
Any student in the district can use the health center. We walk past 2 physical exam rooms, a testing lab, the medical records room, a multi-purpose room, and 2 consultation rooms where the kids can meet with counselors or therapists.
This is where we do a lot of our mental health work. And so students will come here and they'll have maybe one-time visits, or sometimes they'll have a regular counselor that they talk with.
We meet Mizan Alkebulan Abaka, the clinic supervisor, and ask her how kids are dealing with trauma.
The media will tell you, the risk factors will tell you, social determinants of health will tell you that poverty impacts health in a negative way.
She says poverty creates a lot of stress for kids. But what people don't always realize is youth are very resilient.
And they come to this space still with a love of life and still with a love of learning and a love of each other and, you know, just kind of trying to figure out how to make sense of this crazy world that we've kind of provided for them as adults. And I think that that is evident when I walk the halls as well.
Mr. Hong recognizes that quality in his students, too.
We know about the backstories of a lot of our students. And so it's pretty amazing in terms of resiliency to see the high level of calm and serenity we have on campus. And there's a sense of being inspired and amazed and proud that our students are able to push through those traumatic experiences and be able to focus as well as they can.
Principal Hong still has a lot of work to make Roosevelt a world-class school. But in just the second year of his administration, his report card looks pretty good. For Cross Currents, I'm Karen Gordon.
Karen Gordon is a student reporter at Mills College in Oakland, where this series was produced. She has some further thoughts to share about her story.
I really liked being able to go back to the school several times and be there, see the kids, get a better feel for what was happening there. And I really liked the kids there. I mean, I didn't interact with that many of them, but the ones I did interact with seemed really eager and interested and very open. And I didn't, you know, we've been talking about trauma and resilience, and I didn't get the feeling that the kids that I saw had been like beaten down. I felt like there really was that liveliness to them.
That's reporter Karen Gordon talking about our reporting project to spend time in Oakland's Fruitvale and San Antonio neighborhoods. This is Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We asked residents, business owners, students, teachers, and nonprofit workers what was happening in their communities. One thing we heard was a commitment to transform schools, both at traditional public schools like Roosevelt and at charter schools. The Oakland Unified School District has the largest enrollment of any district in Alameda County, with more than 46,000 students in more than 130 schools. About a quarter of those schools are charters. Charter schools operate outside of many district regulations, allowing them to be more flexible than conventional public schools. That can also make them more controversial. Stella Marie Carpio takes us inside one relatively new charter.
Arise High School is inside of the Fruitvale Transit Village in Oakland. The plaza looks hip and newly built. There's a bank, senior center, and a dentist's office. This definitely doesn't seem like the typical setting for a high school with over 200 students. G. Reyes, one of the school's co-principals, says Arise created a unique approach to learning.
What we try to do is build community here. We are only as strong as our weakest person. You know, there's a lot of individuals that we remember in history who have changed things, but they didn't do it themselves. So they were always part of a bigger movement. And so we're trying to help our young people be a movement in themselves. And spiritually, that takes them to understand where they live, understand how their environment doesn't need to be the way it is.
What is one thing that you do to help you feel good about yourself and life?
I like exercising. I love running too.
Principal Reyes is holding his daily meeting with the students. He's asking them about things they do to make themselves feel good. The answers provoke a lot of laughter.
I know. I'm waiting for
him. Most of Arise students are teenagers who live in the surrounding neighborhoods. Many transferred from more traditional public schools, where they often weren't successful. Yet here at Arise, Reyes expects students to do more work, not less.
Our school has more requirements than any other Oakland Unified school. So we want students to just know that when you come here, you know, you may have to do more.
Students who attend Arise start school at 8:45 a.m. and don't leave until 4:30 p.m., that's almost a full 8-hour day, and to top it off, some classes are over 2 hours long.
We have way more homework, which was weird, but I guess I get more engaged in class.
Senior Araceli Flores says she didn't feel challenged at her former school, but Arise has helped her focus on academics.
And I started really, like, learning a lot of stuff that I didn't I didn't learn over there. And it was funny because I took some of the classes, and it's just like, oh, I didn't know this. But as soon as I came here, I started getting straight A's, so I realized I was really smart.
Flores says she transferred from a school where it was easy to skip class.
The teachers weren't really, like, they didn't really care if we really went to class or not. So it was a really tough experience for me because I was young, and then I just didn't really care. So I was like, oh, well, I'm going to just not even go to class because they don't even, like, check or they don't even care.
At Arise, caring about students is critical. Principal Reyes says the staff is committed to giving students the best opportunity and support system they can to make them competitive and successful.
We confront the question of substance abuse, domestic violence, gang violence that's happening in their neighborhoods, and we offer support in that sense. I think we have a really strong program that really focuses on students who are struggling.
Charter schools have more flexibility to do this type of intensive teaching. They can be smaller and more creative than many traditional schools, but they are controversial. Many charter schools in large cities like Oakland are set up with a more scripted learning model that teachers are meant to enforce and students are meant to follow.
We've really seen a growth and expansion of charter schools over the last decade.
Ingrid Sayerochi is the director for the Center for Urban Schools and Partnerships at Mills College. She says charters are popular in Oakland because parents wanted alternatives.
Let's either fund our schools differently, let's organize our schools differently, let's teach differently, let's teach different groups of students. And so charters have been one way to use public dollars to try to provide a public education for students, but in a way that is counter to or an alternative to the typical traditional school.
And why does OUSD need to do things so differently and allow schools like Arise? The answer is complicated, but one reason is the large number of students dropping out.
Oakland has large populations of students that are very, very poor and live in neighborhoods that face unbelievable poverty, that have very limited economic opportunity. So I think we have to look at the range of disparities and the range of opportunities or constraints on young people's lives to understand why it might be that they would be dropping out in large numbers. I think really the way to think about dropout rates is as really the kind of end of a larger process of pushing students out or students disengaging with the educational system.
Sayerochi says Arise is having success with certain young people in part because the staff understands the challenges these teens face.
I am always struck when I visit Arise that this is a school that is infused with what I think of kind of as an ethic or a culture of care.
Like, we share, starting with G, his personal stuff, we share personal stuff and we get advice. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really helpful.
This culture of care is evident at Arise. Even when students aren't doing their best or behaving their best, Principal Reyes says all of the adults look at how problems can be solved, not just dealt with.
Schools that traditionally had this the framework of discipline that was about punishment. You do this, you get suspended, you do this, you get detention, you do this, you get expelled, and so on and so on. And there's never any kind of reflection, any kind of service back to the community, any kind of healing that's done in that practice. As a matter of fact, it contributes to more trauma.
That's why at Arise, when students skip class, miss assignments, or get into fights, they are not expelled. In fact, no student has ever been expelled from Arise since the school opened 5 years ago. So far, 100% of Arise graduates have been accepted to four-year colleges. That track record is only 2 years old, but it's still an impressive statistic for any public school. Even though Arise has only been around for a short while, its unique approach to education has so far been a success. For Cross Currents, I'm Stella Marie Carpio.
Reporter Stella Marie Carpio is a student at Mills College in Oakland, where this series was produced. Here are her thoughts on the story you just heard.
I came in thinking I knew everything about charter schools and how they were viewed in urban settings. And then just discovering this really unique charter school kind of opened my eyes and saw that, made me see that they can be a good thing, you know, if they have the right people behind them with, you know, the right ideas.
She says she was surprised by how tight-knit the community seems.
A lot of people have lived there all their lives. A lot of people live there, work there, you know, their families are there, they're raised there. So everybody kind of just seems to know each other. And so I see people trying to help each other out, trying to support each other. It's not really every man for themselves. You know, they really try to raise each other up and rebuild their neighborhood, their community.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Both Arise and Roosevelt, the two schools you just heard about, are within walking distance of San Antonio Park, the subject of our next story. San Antonio Park stretches a full city block on each side in a lush area near Foothill Boulevard and 18th Avenue in Oakland. About 15 years ago, the park was considered a dangerous eyesore.
It's kind of like a muddy, like sort of...
That's park organizer Gray Kolovson.
It's kind of a field, but not really. Like it wasn't in good enough shape to be used as a field. So the whole park really was pretty unused, and it would get trashed a lot too by, you know, teenagers who would come here at night and vandalize it.
But over the past decade, San Antonio Park has become an important example of what can happen when people pull together to build something up.
The park's kind of perfect. Like, if every neighborhood had a park like this, I think, you know, it was well used and, you know, because different things bring different people. I think the more people you have using it, the better the park is, you know? It carries out its mission better.
Missouri Colley reports on how San Antonio Park is fulfilling that mission.
It's early on a recent Saturday, but the park is already crowded. San Antonio Park is a place where cultures intersect and people of all ages come together to enjoy great weather and each other. People are exercising on the trails and in the tennis court. Kids are playing at the playground and on the soccer fields. But the real party is just getting started here at the northern edge of the park. The monthly garden workday is in full swing.
So we actually have a waiting list at all of the community gardens, including this one. There's like a 9-person waiting list for San Antonio.
Peter Collier is the community garden coordinator for the city of Oakland. He says many of the gardeners are immigrants who bring farming techniques from back home.
They do a really good job of maximizing the space. They grow a lot of greens, which grow so well in Oakland. Yeah, so they definitely bring with them a lot of expertise. That you go to some of the other community gardens, it's a lot of novices, which is great. You know, a lot of people who are just learning to garden. But most of these women have years of experience from their childhood.
About 25 people work in the garden throughout the week, but only 10 are here right now. They are growing things like garlic, lettuce, greens, and snow peas. The food they produce is for their own consumption. But they also share or trade with people from neighboring plots.
So the gardeners pay $30 a year for the use of a plot.
That covers the compost, starter seeds, water, and most recently, the protection of a silver chain link fence. The gardeners are hard at work. Some are turning over their plots, others pulling the ingredients for a meal they may cook tonight. My partner, Roy Chan, is here to translate.
Oh, I'm Mrs. Lee.
Oh, hi, nice to meet you.
This is Missouri. Hello.
Mrs. Lee has been working in the garden for 3 years.
Oh, so she said as part of the package that they give you seeds, carrots, radishes, and then water and the soil. But she says they don't like the carrots and radish, so they go and get their own seeds.
We can eat too many.
Because, you know.
Too much carrot.
The garden is thriving, but they have had some difficulties with robbery.
She says they just recently put up the fence, the city, but before that, people would come and like steal their stuff that they plant. There was one person that brought a truck and like took like pounds and pounds of their vegetables and stole it. So that's why Parks and Rec installed this fence.
Now that the fence is in, things are better, and those types of problems have stopped. It turns out that this community garden is only one part of San Antonio's transformation. The park has come a long way in the last 20 years, and a lot of those changes are thanks to the East Bay Asian Youth Center, or EBACI. EBACI is a short distance from the park. Executive Director David Kakashiba says he got involved with San Antonio in the late 90s, when it looked a lot different than it does today.
San Antonio Park had become a central location for a lot of gang-related violence. Also, while it's a pretty significant size piece of real estate, there weren't that many amenities and facilities for recreational play for young people, for families, and for adults.
It was basically just an open lot, which became overgrown and completely left to nature. So EBACI worked with local officials to improve the park. They held a series of listening sessions and meetings with students, parents, and neighbors to see how people wanted to use the park.
The city agreed and, you know, put in a artificial turf field and a surrounding track. They also installed some basketball courts and created a new play area for children, small children. And then this idea about having a community garden.
What used to be a crime-ridden eyesore is now a place where people of all ages and backgrounds come. That makes Kakashiba proud of the early work Ibeisi did to bring neighbors together.
It's great to hear that that the residents and the gardeners are just taking real ownership of it and just running it, right?
Now, every morning at the park, people are walking and stretching, getting their blood flowing and starting their day here. They are doing things that bring them closer to each other, which also makes the community safer. They have reclaimed the park and are building on those initial victories. Like the fence that now protects the growing food in the garden, members of San Antonio neighborhood protect their park, one playground, soccer game, and vegetable at a time. For Cross Currents, I'm Missouri Colley.
Missouri Colley is a student reporter at Mills College in Oakland, where this series was produced. She says the reporting project was challenging.
You just kind of told us to, like, go to this place and find a story. And, you know, there's a level of, like, anxiety that goes with that, because you're just kind of like, well, what if I don't find a story? But luckily, story kind of found me just because I kept going around San Antonio Park, because it just kept seeming like the most welcoming place to me as I was traveling around Fruitvale and San Antonio. And I just became kind of like a treasure hunt, because I wanted to learn more about it, and I kept having to talk to different people from Parks and Rec, from Roosevelt Middle School, from the East Bay Asian Youth Center. So I just, it kind of grew, you know, on its own.
She also says she was surprised at how nice people were.
You know, you, whenever you go somewhere where you feel like you're sticking out, you have all this technical equipment and you have earphones and you look like an astronaut, and so people are already looking at you weird. But as soon as, you know, you kind of say, hi, I'm a student. Hi, I'm not from here. Can you tell me how to get here, how to do this? Everybody was so nice, so willing to share and just kind of bring you into their world. Like, it's totally the opposite of what you would think would happen when you just start roaming around, you know, kind of blindly. But everybody was really nice.
That's Missouri Colley talking about our 2012 reporting project at Mills College. We spent time in Oakland, San Antonio, and Fruitvale neighborhoods to find out how people were coping with the downturn. Our series continues tomorrow, when we'll find out how people are coming together to solve problems like crime and unemployment.
It's important for neighbors to actually know your neighbors. The only way that you're going to be able to fight the crime within your community is communicate with each other.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. You've been listening to a special series focusing on Oakland's Fruitvale and San Antonio neighborhoods. The series was produced by students at Mills College in collaboration with KALW Public Radio. Thanks to reporters Shawnee Aviram, Stella Marie Carpio, Missouri Colley, Maddie Fowler, Karen Gordon, Esther Honig, and Tamisa Rutledge. Special thanks also to advisors Ingrid Sire-Ochi and Roy Chan. Chris Hoff engineered the series. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. You can hear all of our stories at kalw.org. That's also how you can subscribe to our podcast. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.